I'm Gary Knoll, broadcasting live and video streaming from our studios in New York City. We welcome all of you. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Once a week, we take a very important topic, and we devote whatever time is necessary, 1 to 3 to even 7 hours we've done on a given topic. These are serious programs. I invite people, generally scholars in their field, to share their informed insights on an issue. Today, geoengineering of our weather, its uses, its health risks, the environmental impacts, and who's doing what and why. We have two panelists. My first is Dane Winnington. Dane is a geoengineering scientist with a background in solar engineering and solar energy. He's highly regarded as one of the foremost experts and commentators on stratospheric aerosol geoengineering and solar radiation management. He is a former employee of Bechtel Corporation and worked on the first commercial solar plants in the United States. As a climate researcher, Dane has been studying the issue of geoengineering and chemtrails for over a decade. He is featured in Michael Murphy's new documentary, Why in the World Are They Spraying?, and hosts the information website Geoengineering Watch. He will be joined by Rosalind Peterson. Rosalind is a California president and co-founder of the Agriculture Defense Coalition, which was founded as a public interest organization to educate people and to protect agricultural crop production from uncontrolled experimental weather modification programs and atmospheric heating and testing programs and ocean and atmospheric experimental geoengineering programs. She has a background academically in environmental studies with an emphasis on solar power, crop production, and efficient uses of energy. She is also a retired USDA employee where she was a Farm Service Agency agricultural crop loss adjuster. Now, she focuses in on geoengineering schemes coupled with experimental atmospheric programs and what negative impact they might have upon our environment and also upon nature's pollinators, bees, butterflies, wildlife, trees, human health, soils, and our water supply. Why am I doing this program? Because time and again, when you even bring up the topic of chemtrails, you are dismissed out of hand. On the left, they would like to think anyone talking about chemtrails are probably ex-members or current members of the John Birch Society. They're nut jobs. They have no credibility, so don't even bring up the topic. On the right, they are told this really isn't real, so keep your delusions intact. Unfortunately, the mainstream media has not covered chemtrails at all, or when it has been approached, it's been dealt with in a very pejorative and a condescending manner. Now let us go to our guest, who is standing by to share his point of view. First of all, nice to have you with us today.
Thank you for having us, Gary.
I'm going to do this more like a classroom on the air. I won't be interrupting you unless there's a specific issue I'd like you to expand on. But what I'd like to do is I'd like for you to give us first the overview, the larger overview, and define the aerosol chemtrails. Maybe briefly summarize how weather modification through chemtrail engineering works. I know that you also have a knowledge on the health issues related to particulate matter, compounds of aluminum, barium, strontium, being main ones from chemtrails. And when our sulfur compounds used in geoengineering work or don't work, what's the outcome? So could we begin there? Because that's where some people have concerns and other people should.
First, I want to correct the record. I'm not a geoengineering scientist. If I was, I would be on the other end of this equation. I do have a background in solar, which you described. I've been a climate researcher for 10 years. The scope and scale of geoengineering is far beyond what most people understand or comprehend. It's certainly anything but a proposal for an experiment, and I believe all the press about Bill Gates and Branson are merely red herrings because governments around the globe have been engaged in this, all the data would indicate, for a very long time. In fact, data indicates they've been experimenting on the poles for 50 years or more. So these articles we see about suspending a hose from the ground with helium balloons and pumping particulates out or putting space mirrors out, those are simply distractions to try to pull people away from the obvious programs that have been deployed for a very long time. Major effects of geoengineering. Yes, the health effects you mentioned. According to Dr. Russell Blaylock, who is an internationally recognized neuroscientist, these particles are so small they enter right through the lung lining into the bloodstream where they adhere to cell receptors, migrate into the brain and spinal cord. The lethality of these particulates cannot be overstated. Geoengineering particulates are not disputed to cause ozone, massive ozone damage. Now we have a massive northern hemisphere ozone hole. This is in addition to the southern hemisphere hole that we've heard about for decades. They are trying desperately to hide this fact. Canadian scientists that are on the research team dealing with this issue are being threatened with termination if they speak to media. And we have, of course, the diminished rainfall. And again, this is an aspect of particulates in the atmosphere that is not disputed in the scientific community. Geoengineering disperses rainfall, period. We have global dimming, which can only be attributed to the amount of particulates in the atmosphere from geoengineering if one examines the data. The latest figures on global dimming, fully 20% of the sun's direct rays that reached the planet several decades ago now no longer are. This stops evaporation. The particulates reduce wind, which also thwarts evaporation. So now, while we do have a warming planet, absolutely, whatever one wants to consider the cause, and certainly there's no denying the planet is warming, and geoengineering must be attributed to a part of that. So anthropogenic warming must be a part of this equation. And at this point, unless or until geoengineering stops, I think the majority of blame should be placed on these programs, as they have completely thwarted the planet's attempts to respond to the damage being done. So to reiterate, we have a shredded ozone, we have radically diminished rainfall, we have a poisoning of land, waters, soils, and indeed the air we breathe, and the totality of these programs can't be overstated. And this penetrating UV, one other issue to mention before I give the floor back to you, Gary, is that almost none are aware that we may be in for an ice-free Arctic this year, not 2100, not 2070, 2050, 2030, but this year. The ramifications from that are huge, as the penetrating UV now, which affects deeper levels of the ocean, now appears to have released methane hydrates from the sea floor. Methane is spewing into the Arctic. This greenhouse gas is 20 times more potent than CO2 over a 100-year time horizon, but it's 100 times more potent over a 12-year time horizon. So the wheels that geoengineering has perhaps set in motion literally hold life on the planet in balance, in the balance.
All right, I appreciate your opening overview. I'd like for you to go into greater depth.
Go ahead.
Let's start with, I want to take you through the increasing soil pH in California from 5.6 to where it is today, and what that means for people who may not appreciate what happens when you radically change the pH of a soil, what it does for the capacity of the soil to grow crop, to hold water, to have microorganisms and earthworms that nourish the soil, what that means. Could you start there, and I'll just take you through some of these specific points.
That's an issue I'm somewhat familiar with, and I'll go over my experience with that. If Rosalind is indeed on the air, then I'm sure she can go into greater detail on that aspect. What I can tell you is that we have the USDA soil baseline studies in Shasta and Siskiyou County in Northern California. These were very expensive and very extensive studies, down to the acre of soil pHs. I have personally been in the field with USDA soil scientists testing soil pHs and seen changes that they showed in their testing of 15 and in a couple cases almost 20 times more alkaline than the historical baseline. And you add this soil pH change to the bioavailable aluminum, which is absolutely positively in the rain, period. We've done dozens and dozens of rain tests in Shasta, Siskiyou County. The rain at times is completely saturated with aluminum. And the effects of this bioavailable aluminum are well documented. It causes organisms to stop uptaking nutrients, which causes a slow, protracted death. We are seeing this in the fir trees in our region. And on the quantities of aluminum found in rain tests in our area, from an original baseline test in 2005 of 7 parts per billion of aluminum, which was already very high, we have seen single rain events escalate as much as 50,000% from that already high baseline up to almost 3,500 parts per billion of aluminum. So we're talking about rain that is literally lethal. We're seeing the greatest tree die-off in riparian areas where they have the most water, but also the most runoff and thus the most contamination. So it's a virtual sterilization of the soil for many, if not most, organisms. And the aquatic insect life also, as tested by Francis Mangles, former U.S. Forest Service biologist, who has tested the local tributaries into the Sacramento River, which is, by the way, most of the water for Southern California, has seen up to a 95% decline in aquatic insect life. So, again, the ramifications here are huge. And above all this, again, there are climate wheels now turning that amount to global game changers in and of themselves. And these issues won't be hidden for very long. However controversial the state of the climate might be, it will become very clear very soon. This data is absolutely valid and real, and these changes are occurring. And the skeptics on the issue of how damaged the climate is are going to have a rude awakening very, very soon.
Let's shift.
Geoengineering, again, at this point, being probably the biggest single factor in driving the climate to the state it's in, the horrible state that it's in.
Would you suggest it's also equally responsible for species extinction, particularly plants, and is related to fungal infections, and some of these can be traced directly back to geoengineering chemicals?
Yes, I would. The species extinction rate today, conservatively, is 1,000 times background extinction rates. That's 100,000% of normal. The latest figures document 70 to 80% of those extinctions, plant and animal, are fungally related. Geoengineering particulates in the atmosphere are platforms for fungal proliferation, and it is thought by some researchers that experimental pathogens have been showing up. I personally spoke to people from the Carnicom Institute that feel they're looking at possibly engineered pathogens that have fungal characteristics, and you know that's another specialty area. But there's no denying that the fungal infection for people as well. I think according to the Mayo Clinic, contrary to what most Western physicians would say, the Mayo Clinic feels that up to 95% of, for example, fungal sinusitis, a chronic sinusitis is fungally caused. So the ramifications there, again, can't be overstated to our health.
Let us look at this possibility. The geoengineering is really about weapons of mass destruction, to create situations to serve for an enemy to be devastated because their crops would be destroyed, their resources would be polluted, their populations would become destabilized. Do you think that is possible? Do you think that that is any proof to support that contention at all?
That's an excellent question. I think it's more than possible. I think it's probable. Again, you have a military document owning the weather, stating the particular strategic goals of manipulating weather. You have leaders of countries like Ahmadinejad, who has already stated in front of the UN that this is exactly what he believes is going on. And you have other players, in the case of our own country and our own population, like Monsanto, that, as is well documented in Michael Murphy's new film, Why in the World Are They Spraying, been documented, Monsanto's research and now release of their abiotic-resistant corn, which is drought-resistant, aluminum-resistant, And amazingly, they've released this newest version right in the middle of the worst drought in U.S. history and corn decimated crops. So it would be very unlikely that this is not a very large web, a very large cabal with very many layers to the onion here, from strategic military purposes to biological experimentation, weather manipulation to try to mask the true extent of climate damage that's already been done. But in the case of geoengineering, although data indicates that they can cause widespread temporary regional cooling, it comes at the cost of a much worsened warming situation overall, because those particulates trap radiant heat as well as deflecting. And once the ozone layer is shredded, there's a much more penetrating radiation. In the case of skin cancers, we know that radiation penetrates deeper when there's an ozone hole. Same is true for the oceans. And back to the methane release, which again, by itself is a global game changer, this shredded ozone layer penetrating deeper into the lower levels of the ocean has now appeared to release, to have started release of methane clathrates, or hydrates, excuse me, from the seafloor, which can potentially change our reality in a year or two. And in fact, the current temperatures around the continental U.S., Gary, sure indicate that the data we're seeing is correct. There's been over 50,000 high temperature records broken in the lower 48 this year, and that's even in spite of the National Weather Service changing the method which they take temperatures some 10-12 years ago, which in essence lowers the reading 2 to 3 degrees. Many might have noticed this when, you know, your temperature gauge in your car shows significantly higher than what is being reported. So it appears there's been many efforts to mask the true extent of damage done to the climate by these programs, but I believe the wheels turning now are so significant that this issue will not be able to be hidden much longer.
I appreciate that answer, Dane. We can perhaps appreciate any attention being given to reduce the rise in global warming. However, clearly the use of toxic chemicals and geoengineering activities to lessen the sun's heat or global dimming has substantial adverse effects on health and environmental concerns, and some of it may be irreversible. Would you explain what you know about the science behind global dimming entails and how effective are these chemicals to cool the planet? And you mentioned at the beginning that the Arctic may be completely free of ice for the first time this summer. Unless you put that in context, that the Arctic is actually very shallow, in many places 500 feet, and that we have one of the largest trapped methane reserves in the world, we would have it also in Antarctica. We have a lot in the Russian steppes and the large tundra, but it stays frozen most of the year. When you start warming that up, that methane is going to escape. When that methane escapes, you've got a lot of problems, and we don't seem to be paying any attention to this. Our only interest in the Arctic thinning of ice and then thawing completely is how quickly can we get oil rigging stations in there. And my thought is that's really stupid, because they have no experience of what happens when the ice refreezes, and no amount of metal and strength of alloy could prevent from that any of those rigs from just being crushed like a little stick figure. To me, it's irresponsible how they're going about this mad rush for the minerals. So talk about what this all means when it comes to, oh, we've got a great idea. No, they don't have great ideas. Give us your insight.
I fully agree with your take on that, Gary. And beyond stupid, this is insanity of a magnitude that is difficult to grasp. Particulates in the upper atmosphere, again, although they can create a temporary cooling, as was well documented in the eruption of Mount Pinatubo in 1992, which dropped global temperatures about 1 degree Fahrenheit, that event also shreds ozone, and the cooling effect is very temporary, at which time the warming effect is actually worsened. And also that year, 1992, because of those particulates, was until recently by 50% the lowest rainfall year ever recorded. Again, the particulates diminish disperse rain, period. On the significance of losing the Arctic ice cap, the gravity of that cannot be overstated as well. The ice reflects about 92 to 93% of the incoming sun's energy. That's the albedo of the ice. When the ice is gone, the ocean absorbs something from 91 to 92%. So you have a complete reversal from a reflection of most of the energy to an absorption of most of the energy. As you already alluded to, the methane reservoir in the East Siberian Shelf of the Arctic is thought to be something on the order of 10,000 gigatons. To put this into context, if 60 of that 10,000 gigatons released, that would increase by 400% the warming gases in the atmosphere. Only 60 of 10,000. So this is a virtual avalanche of damage to the climate on top of everything that's already been done. And to simply focus on exploiting the resources there will be a short-lived adventure if the planet spins out of control in the way that it appears to be headed very rapidly. And to put a little more light on that, the previous two methane mass expulsions recorded in the Earth's history in the last 300 million years, the end of the Permian era, about 255 million years ago, methane mass extinction. And by the way, both of those events were thought to be methane reservoirs far smaller than the one now releasing. But that's, and also the other release 55 million years ago, Paleocene, Eocene, both methane mass extinctions, approximately 70% terrestrial extinction, and something on the order of 90 to 95% extinction in the oceans. So you add what we've already done to the planet, the horrific damage already done, and now add this methane event, it's a very, very bad combination. And I don't think it can be hidden much longer. And the short-sightedness of looking for resources while the planet is literally heading for incineration is very short-sighted indeed.
A few more areas. Do you believe that there's any evidence to support the global warming rather than preventing, being prevented by geoengineering, is being increased?
I do, and NASA documents this as well. I think NASA, the article is maybe 1 or 2 months old, but they definitely document that the high-level cirrus clouds, which are the goal of geoengineering aerosol disbursement, actually trap more heat than they deflect. So it's a real paradox when you have some of the agencies that appear to be involved with these programs. You have elements in these agencies disclosing that, in fact, great damage is being done. And the elephant in the room, however big it is, it's still not acknowledged by anybody in the academic world per se. And you have other red flags, like NOAA, an article about a year ago, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, that admitted in the last decade the atmosphere has been filled with particulates, and they don't know where the majority of them are coming from. And this is a really ludicrous statement when aerosols have been studied for so long, and where they're migrating from has been studied for so long, that to pretend they don't know where they're coming from is really ridiculous. And the system is rigged to this point, Gary, that I've been in high-level EPA meetings in Sacramento. One was arranged by a congressional rep. There were five high-level EPA people there, and I was told to my face that they are mandated to test for combustion particulates only. The rest of the sample goes out the window. And that makes it pretty hard to find what you're not looking for. So the system is rigged. The California Water Quality Agency quit testing for aluminum in 2002. So, again, hard to find what you're not looking for. So this elephant in the room is absolutely enormous. Scientists do know what's going on. I was at a marine laboratory along the coast of California 8 weeks ago, spoke to NOAA people there off the record. And once they felt safe, I was told in my face, they absolutely know what's going on, and they're very alarmed, but they don't know what to do. I personally know this is the case with fish and game people in California, USDA people. Academia is simply afraid to speak out on the record.
My last two issues I'd like for you to address, please. One is HAARP, and that is one of the most secret programs we have. And yet, if you've been looking at the evidence over the last 30 years, you'll realize this could also be some of the negative consequences of HAARP, the beaching of aquatic life, mammals, everything from porpoises and seals to whales, and heating of the environment. Tell us what you know about HAARP And then my final question is going to be on chemtrails. What you know about chemtrails, what you feel that we can and cannot prove at this time about their concern for our health and well-being.
On HARP, and that's certainly a huge part of this equation, if one examines all the data, I think there's 18 ionosphere heaters, which is what HARP is, around the globe. And now there appears to be an ever-escalating weather warfare scenario involving the United States, Russia, and China. And there appears to be HARP facilities being built at this time, even in Antarctica, by all three competing powers. And as an ionosphere heater, it can heat the upper levels of the atmosphere to very high temperatures. 15,000 degrees Fahrenheit is one of the study's conclusions, and it causes a bulge in the atmosphere. And the stated purpose militarily is to create resistance on an incoming ICBM. However, in creating this bulge, they can create high pressure zones and thus steer the jet stream. And indeed, we see some very anomalous things with the jet stream. The cold snap that happened in Eastern Europe last February, there was incredibly anomalous jet stream movement. That same jet stream movement caused the Arctic ice melt to start fully 2 months ahead of schedule. And in geologic terms, that's absolutely incomprehensible. And then, interestingly enough, there was what some have concluded, and I believe is possible, a backtracking of the geoengineers to try to do damage control and what they'd already done in their creation of this cold event in Europe to hold the jet stream north, hold the cold air north, and amazingly, a late season and very unprecedented refreeze of the Arctic pack started. And thus, we had in March 15,232 temperature records broken in the continental U.S. because, as we remember, the temperatures were off the charts, in some cases, like in the Dakotas, breaking former records by 32 degrees. And so in the course of what appeared to be damage control, an anomalous jet stream movement north, probably linked to HARP, caused the reverse. Instead of a cold event, obviously a warming event, as they're trying to possibly, again, this is speculation, do damage control on the melt process they'd started in the Arctic. Now, right now, in the western U.S., we've been forecast to get a cool down for about 4 weeks. It hasn't happened, and the weather patterns have stayed absolutely stationary. And as the Arctic melt accelerates right now, and to give people an idea of how fast the ice pack is melting, up until 3 days ago, the pack was losing 100,000 square kilometers of surface area a day, not a month or a week, but a day. The last 3 days, that has accelerated further to approximately 130,000 square kilometers. And it's not only the surface area in question, but it's the thickness of the ice, the mass. What 20 years ago was 5 meters thick, now is 1 meter thick. So in comparison to historical norms, there's not much more than a snow cone left up there. And there's a very anomalous jet stream pattern right now that's baking us in the west, and perhaps that's some effort again by HARP to try to damage control on the poles. But again, as you've already alluded to, Gary, these attempts to manipulate these incredibly complex systems are nothing but folly to the greatest degree, and they can only do harm, and indeed they appear to only be doing harm, but yet there's people making money in these processes, and players like Monsanto, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, their strategic purposes. I mean, there's probably, again, many, many layers to this onion, all of which we can't know. But having studied it for a decade, I have come to the conclusion that short of nuclear contamination, there is no greater or no immediate threat, no more immediate threat than geoengineering.
My last question, which I'm going to preface with a statement, is about chemtrails. But also, my statement is, if you are correct in your assumptions, your hypothesis that HARP and other programs are intentional and they're manipulating weather patterns for possibly military application, then having made a mistake, have to try to cover it up. They could not possibly do this unless the National Security Agency knew about it, because they know about everything, all communications, any type of all, computer, every cell phone, every text, every email, fax, they read them all. So they would have to be completely knowledgeable. That also means that those 17 agencies that sit in on those general meetings involving national security would also be have to be aware, at least at the top level. The White Houses and their full cabinet, since these are discussed in the morning briefings to the president, and the president's CIA and intelligence analysis paper is given, this would also have to be knowledge to those people. So you're looking at probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 20,000 people, all told, who would have knowledge of this and all have to be complicit at some level to allow this to go forward, because these are otherwise crimes against humanity, and all the people involved could be held accountable. So either we have one massive cover-up or we don't have any cover-up, because I don't believe it's possible to have done this as a rogue group of scientists. They wouldn't have the authority, the funding, or the capacity to protect themselves. Or it is indeed just another one of the ways that we have manipulated the public, as we have done with the false reports on the actual causes and consequences of 9/11, for example. I can't tell you who did what, but I can sure, along with 2,000 scientists and engineers, tell you what didn't happen, we were told happened. So which do you believe, unless you have your own scenario, is the appropriate analysis of HAARP, if it is a biological, or if it is a geoengineering weapon of mass destruction?
I fully agree with your outline of the scenario, and I believe the amount of people that know these programs going on is probably extremely extensive. Having communicated with some of the world's most recognized geoengineers, in one case, David Keith at the conference in San Diego, where he went on the record stating that, they hadn't done any studies of these programs whatsoever, and could terrible things happen tomorrow? Yes. And what that indicates is that I believe there's a great many people in government, especially, of course, primarily, that are following the advice of a handful of geoengineers that live in some sort of bubble where consequences aren't an issue, and they lead the powers that be to believe perhaps that they can indeed have this sort of control without consequences to everything that lives. So although a great many people probably know, I agree with your take on that completely. I think many, at least until recently, believe they could somehow carry this off. And again, for those that believe weather modification is some fringe and not realistic issue, weather modification history goes back a very long way. It was very successful in Vietnam. These programs are well documented. Project Popeye, flooding the Ho Chi Minh Trail, 76, the UN passed resolution forbidding weather manipulation in wartime. At any given point, there's 100 to 150 publicized programs in the continental U.S. All of them pale in comparison to the global programs. But I do believe that, again, a great many people know. And as far as a weapon of mass destruction, of course, the whole geoengineering scenario from the Sprang to HAARP, when they're literally ripping holes in the atmosphere, the folly of that cannot be overstated. And indeed, it's always asked, or often asked, if this was true, why would those in power engage in this? If they're doing this indeed to themselves as well, why would they do this? And my answer to that is, if one looks at the detonation of nuclear weapons, of which I believe over 1,800 have been detonated on the planet, all of us have strontium-90 in our bones from that, including those in power. Why did they do that? Don't they know after a few dozen that they work? But they did it anyway, because that quest for power is simply too alluring. And Michael Murphy alludes to this well in relating it to a drug addict, which knows he's harming himself and everyone around him, but can't stop anyway. So yes, I believe they're weapons of mass destruction. Yes, I believe a great many people know, although I believe in the military, of which there's many good people, those carrying out these programs, I believe, are being told they're doing something benevolent. We've tried to encourage people to spread awareness on geoengineering so that military people and families can investigate on their own and realize that what they're engaged in holds their lives in the balance with the rest of us. We hope to have a chance of stopping these systems from the inside out when those carrying them out refuse to participate. That is our hope. But yes, the totality of destruction that can be caused by these programs, Gary, cannot be overstated.
I appreciate your insights, Dane. There is one last consideration. I'm not asking for feedback. It's just a ad hominem thought thrown into the universe. What if we had heavy-duty players, disaster capitalists, such as hedge fund managers and commodity specialists who managed to have deals with front groups and tech organizations and consulting firms that work with the people involved in geoengineering, who could predict which of the crops are likely to fail or succeed in any given season? Having that advanced knowledge or being able to control any of that means that the people could put a position into the market that could reap them hundreds of millions or even hundreds of billions of dollars of profit per season. Now, I do not have proof of that. I'm merely allowing that for possible motive for those who say, well, gee whiz, what if? And I'm saying, what if behind some of this at this stage were those who were smart enough to see what they could do if they could actually predict the future in commodities? Just a thought.
I think your thought is exactly correct and very verifiable. And again, this is covered in Michael Murphy's film, Why in the World Are They Spraying, with interviews from traders at the commodity exchange in Chicago. And this is indeed occurring. And when we see blanket spraying of the North Pacific, which we document on the geoengineeringwatch.org site, which is virtually shutting off our rain, there's no question the science is clear, the particulates stop rain, and we have satellite imagery that we post very frequently of the entire North Pacific being sprayed. Now the same is true for the South Pacific off the coast of South America. They are shutting the rain off to vast areas of the world. And again, then Monsanto comes in and rams their GMO crop down our throat. Traders are making billions on the failure of crops. That is occurring. And so, I mean, it is impossible not to conclude for me and for many others that, and the data really backs this up, that indeed exactly what you described is occurring. And so the noose around our neck is being sucked up by the day where the food supply is being controlled. Thus, the population can be controlled, and I think there's really no denying this aspect, which you just outlined, for any that truly do any investigation at all. And I think that will become even more clear as the next few months unfold, and they continue to keep the water shut off. And if people look at the satellite data, they look at the imagery, they look at the science reports, much of which is posted on the Geoengineering Watch site, but people can again search their own, Gary. They can search geoengineering particulates cause drought and other such themes. And this data is there. It's there for anyone who chooses to look. So, again, the totality of life support systems right down to our food supply that's being affected by this issue is as big as one can imagine and, again, can't be overstated.
Dane Wigington from Mount Shasta region of California, whose website geoengineeringwatch.org, and who's contributed to Michael Murphy's new documentary, Why in the World Are They Spraying. Thank you very much. I appreciate being with us today.
Thank you, Gary.
And Dane, D-A-N-E, is a geoengineering scientist with a background in solar energy, and he is very knowledgeable on stratospheric aerosol geoengineering and solar radiation management. Let us now go to our final panelist standing by, Rosalind Peterson. Thank you for being with us today, Rosalind.
Well, thank you. It's a privilege to be a guest at your show today.
Again, as I did with Dane, I invite my guests to take whatever time necessary to lay out their field of expertise on the topic at hand. The topic, as you know, is geoengineering, its uses, health risks, environmental impacts, and you have background in a lot of these different areas, so I'd like for you to talk about our threats to agriculture and animal life, including impact upon pollinators such as bees. And also you might want to give a little background of what happens if we don't have bees and how much of our food is pollinated from bees. We already had a lot of bee colony collapse for different reasons. And I'm wondering if you have any evidence that geoengineering might have contributed to that. And then also, you might want to share some ideas about the geoengineering project the Navy is conducting in the oceans with iron fertilization. And finally, I'm going to ask you to offer a comment to Bill Gates and the other billionaires who are backing with enormous amounts of money geoengineering projects in New Mexico, spraying millions of tons of reflective particulates, sulfur dioxide, 30 times miles above Earth. So any of those areas you'd like to take on, take your time. The forum is yours.
Well, thank you very much. There's a lot of issues here that you've asked me to cover, and I want to say first of all that I'm in total agreement with Dane Wigington on his presentation on your show today. I also want to say that geoengineering has several definitions. It can be called climate remediation. Can also be come under the heading of solar radiation management. And what it's defined as is planetary scale environmental engineering of our atmosphere, our weather, the oceans, the very Earth itself, with a wide variety of schemes from ocean iron fertilization to the release of chemicals and particles into the atmosphere, some of which is designed to reduce the amount of direct sunlight reaching the Earth, called solar radiation management. One of the chemicals that they're talking about releasing into the atmosphere is sulfur. And we already know the effects of sulfur. And part of the release of sulfur dioxide, as it's proposed by David Keith, for example, in New Mexico, in a new program that they intend to initiate within the year, is to inject sulfur via a balloon mechanism with water vapor. And they're going to inject it into the atmosphere to conduct tests. And the tests are going to involve a whole series of issues relating to changes in the weather. They know that sulfur, when mixed with chlorine and water vapor, can cause ozone, beneficial atmospheric ozone depletion. The size and scale of their tests will be enormous enough to get back a result for their study, but will also impact others, not only in the state of Mexico, but in other states, because the sulfur will come back down to Earth. And one of the things we know from a February 2011 report from the state of California is that there is enormous evidence on the developmental and reproductive toxicity of sulfur dioxide, just as one issue. The other issue that we need to talk about is when we put particles and chemicals into the atmosphere, they come back down. They pollute our air, our water, our soil, and they also have impacts on human health with increasing asthma and other issues. So there can be devastating impacts from what we know already comes down from volcanoes, but also in putting up things like aluminum oxide. We're beginning to learn more about aluminum oxide, and a recent report today shows that nano-sized particles, for example, like nano-sized particles of aluminum oxide, can cause harm to crops and can kill necessary bacteria and fungus that is needed for plants to grow healthy and strong. We also know that the reduction of direct sunlight reaching the Earth is going to reduce photosynthesis, which means that the energy for crops to produce and trees to go healthy and strong will be reduced by this lack of photosynthesis. So we're beginning to play gods, in a sense, with these various mechanisms that we're implementing and putting into our skies. And also because the military, for example, put an aluminum oxide dust cloud in 2009 over the entire eastern seaboard of the United States. The aluminum oxide particulates will come down and will impact our oceans, will impact our soil and our water supplies, increase ocean acidification and cause other problems as well. Most people did not know about the charged aerosol release experiment by the U.S. Navy putting up this aluminum oxide dust cloud. And they don't know that ongoing NASA and U.S. Air Force and Navy programs putting up trimethyl aluminum into the atmosphere on the East Coast and over Texas and other areas has been ongoing for many years. This is all having a tremendous impact on the health of the health of our crops, the health of people who live in various areas, and it's having an enormous impact for all of us on what's going to happen as they increasingly put more aerosols into the atmosphere.
All right. Continue on. Give us your insight into how serious will this be for the average person? How serious will it be for farmers? What impact might it have on already drought-stricken areas? 29 states in the United States are now drought-stricken, and now we're in the longest drought since the 1930s. We have great dust storms, some rising as high as a mile in the sky, and going several miles wide, looking like something out of a science fiction film. This is now, today. And if it's only going to get worse, then what role are you suggesting that this could end up playing in that scenario?
Well, when you put more particulates into the atmosphere, you can reduce rainfall, you can exacerbate the problem, and you can also change the climate itself. And thus, when you're putting up particles and chemicals, and along with the weather modification programs, for example, that are ongoing in the United States, you are at a tremendous disadvantage because all of a sudden you're going to have increasing droughts, increasing floods, where you get enormous amounts of water in a very short period of time, and then it's dry again. So this is changing our weather. And as each experiment is conducted, whether by the military, whether by individuals, private corporations, anyone can modify the weather or conduct these atmospheric experiments. And there's no laws in the United States which says that you can't conduct them. Therefore, what happens is that anyone with money or capability or the technology can change your weather, can put chemicals and particles into the atmosphere. They don't need public consent, and they can conduct these experiments in relative obscurity for the most part. Very seldom are we told until almost the day of, or sometimes after the experiment has been conducted. Rarely are we given any advance notice. And so, therefore, the experiments can go on without our knowledge. But eventually they show up, and we've got sections on my website which involve upper atmospheric testing going on using aluminum and barium and strontium and sulfur hexafluoride and a whole host of other chemicals and particles and gases dating back to the 1960s.
Rosalind, why do they continue to do the same experiments over and over and over again? Why do we see these chemtrails? If they were doing it for some legitimate scientific purpose, they wouldn't have had to have done them tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of times. They would have done them, they would have come to some conclusion, and they would have either ceased or explained what they did, the results, and gone forward. That's legitimate science. I can't see the motive of continuing to do this over and over again.
The technology is getting greater and greater. The things that we can test for, the size of particles that we can now produce into the nano size, the love of the experiment in controlling the weather, the love of the experiment and the experimentation to do things is almost addicting. In other words, we have the technology, we have the money, and it becomes quite addicting to want to just go ahead and conduct more and more experiments. Plus, military funding and government funding becomes unending for universities, unending for those wishing to conduct these experiments as well. So that's why we have Bill Gates and we have David Keith and some of these geoengineers that want to conduct the sulfur experiment in New Mexico looking for public funding, because they don't want to spend the money themselves. They want the government, the taxpayer, to pick up the funding. And the university studies that will go on once the experiment goes through, this will be funded by government or military, you can bet, or NASA will give contracts to conduct these studies. And so it's a big bonus for those wishing to enrich their lives and their pocketbooks.
Give us your final take on this. Looking at the big picture, what is the worst that could happen? In what time frame? And what can we do about it?
The worst case scenario is that we destroyed the Earth's ability through contamination, through our experiments, to produce food and to give us life here on Earth. And therefore, the impacts from that will have tremendous consequences. Exactly when we reach that tipping point, I don't quite know, but I realize already that crop production in the United States has been dropping, that we're becoming more dependent on foreign countries, which are also having crop losses as well for food. We are having impacts on our honeybees. And one of the things, not only the chemicals that are affecting honeybees, but the neonicotinoids especially, but also when you have UV radiation too great, it impairs a bee's ability to navigate from the food supply back to their hive. And the honeybees, the other pollinators that this will impact over time, means that two-thirds of our food supply within the United States and around the world will be in jeopardy, because bees and other pollinators pollinate about that much as far as food, the flowers, everything we see. Two-thirds of what you eat is pollinator-produced.
That's a serious situation. What do you believe we can do about it?
One thing, we have to become educated about what this topic is about and realize that it's not a conspiracy theory, that these programs are real, and that when they're real, just like the geoengineering experiment that's going to be conducted within the air in New Mexico is real, we have to join together and begin to say no to these schemes and programs. In other words, we have to put a stop. We have to say that we're not going to just allow some group of individuals or clique or the military to experiment on our atmosphere because of the impact that all of us, with our food supply, our water, our soils, human health, crop production, all of it is going to be impaired. And I think that the sooner that we learn that this is really real and step up to the plate and make a difference, the better it's going to be for all of us. I can't predict a day or a date. I don't have that information. But we're already seeing it in huge droughts and unusual weather events. We're seeing it in air and water and soil pollution. We're seeing it in a lack of vitamin D from the man-made cloud cover we see overhead from jet trails. We're seeing it as a side effect of lower solar panel power production. When you have man-made cloud cover produced by jet contrails, then what happens is that your solar panel power production drops. There's all kinds of levels of problems that are being created, and that you have to see them as a whole, not just as sometimes as individual problems, but begin to see it as a whole.
Clearly, your AgriculturalDefenseCoalition.com is doing a lot of advanced work, and we're going to rely upon you as a primary source and a call to action to keep us informed, and in return, we are going to give you all of our support to carry forward with educating the public and where we can stand up and protest wherever necessary.
Well, thank you very much, and I hope that you'll join us in protesting this geoengineering project in New Mexico, because it's the first one that's been announced in the United States in advance. And the consequences of this program could be tremendous, and if we say no today to this one, we have a chance to stop those coming down upon us in the future. And I hope everyone will take a look at the website, AgricultureDefenseCoalition.org, and look at the New Mexico section and join us in opposing putting sulfur into the atmosphere and the health effects and not only that, but the acid rain that's going to occur just from this particular experiment.
We will certainly be there to support you in your efforts. And we have a lot of listeners out in New Mexico. Rosalind Peterson, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
And thank you.
Rosalind Peterson is California president and co-founder of Agricultural Defense Coalition. And I give you her website several times. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. This has been the Progressive Commentary Hour.